Today's share of the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Kedushin Daf Yud Gimel. We begin about 13, 14 lines down from the top with the words Hayi Issa. We are on your Gimel Lamed Aleph, of course, and we're telling another Maisa Shahaya in regards to what we had discussed yesterday about whether if somebody, a woman receives Kedushin and she's silent, what does that signify? So here we have another case. Hayi Issa, the once was a woman who was selling the Havakom Mizavna Varshechei. Rashi tells us that she was selling this varshechei, it means a bindulus. She was selling bindles, red bindles, some sort of a silk ribbon. Now, also how a guy comes along and grabs one of them, chotaf varshecha mina, and he goes and grabs one of these ribbons from her. So she says to him, Armalei, give it back to me. So, you stole it from me, give it back to me. Amalah, the man says back to the woman in a very, very surprising comment, if I give it back to you, mikachali, you shall become mikudeshes to me. Now, what does she do? She takes it from him. She kalt it, she goes and takes it from him. However, the ishtika, she is silent. She doesn't say anything when she takes this back. So does this silence represent an acceptance of his offer of kiddushin? Or is she just ignoring him, basically, and saying, give back to me what I want? So the word says, it's the latter. Amar of Nachman says, the woman is essentially saying over here, in? Yeah, I'm taking back. Shakli, I am taking it back. However, vididi shakli, but it's mine. I'm not accepting your kedushin. I'm taking back what you stole from me. And therefore, this woman is not mikudeshes. But Esri Rav or Rav Nachman, Rav questions this, and he asks the Rav Nachman, he says, wait a second, we have a brisa that seems to indicate otherwise. The brisa says, kidsha begezel, if a woman received kiddushin that was stolen, the Gemara later on will tell us that it was stolen from her. So she received something that was stolen via gezel. Gezel is when a person has absolutely no fear of the police. He just walks up to you and he grabs something from you. Ubechamas means that he paid for it, albeit it was against your will. He walked into your store and says, I'm taking this, here's the $10 for it. You say, but it's not for sale. Say, tough luck. And he takes it, although, albeit he pays for you. That's called chomos. Ubigneva is somebody who surreptitiously comes in and steals something. He's afraid of the police. He is going to take it, but without anybody watching him. So he surreptitiously takes it from you. That's why by Gneva, we have the concept of kefel. You have to pay double because you've demonstrated that you're afraid of the police, but you're not afraid of God. As opposed to a gatzlan, if he steals something, he's saying, I'm not afraid of anybody. So it's less of a chutzpah in a way that he says, I'm not afraid of the police and I'm not afraid of God, as opposed to the guy who says, I'm afraid of the police, but I'm not afraid of God. So therefore, a ganav pays kefil and a goslim does not. In any event, this woman receives kiddushin with her own item that was either stolen or chomos from her. It was paid for, but not with her permission, or it was stolen from her surreptitiously. Or, alternatively, oshechotav selam yodo. He just takes the coin right from her hand and then returns it to her v'kitsha right away. And in all of these situations, mikudeshes, the woman is mikudeshes. So Rava says to Rav Nachman, you see here that even though the woman was silent, in each of these situations she was silent, here she's mikudeshes. So why in the case of the bindle, in the case of the selling of the ribbon that was taken from her, do we say in this situation that she's not mikudeshes? So Gemara says, Rav Nachman explains the difference between the two cases. In the case of the bindle, they were not talking about shiduchim. Whereas here, in the case of the kitchen begezel, chomos v'gneva, or shechot of selam yada, hosom b'dishadach, they were talking about getting married. They were people who knew each other very well, and they were discussing getting married. And then he grabbed that thing from her, stole it from her, whatever, and he gave it to her, and she was silent. So therefore, we assume in that situation, she accepted it because she didn't protest. So therefore, in that situation, she's mikudeshes. And Rav Nachman says, I'll show you that I'm right. And where do I know that there's a difference between whether they were actively talking about getting married, and therefore when her silence represents an acceptance of the kiddushin, and in a situation where they weren't talking about kiddushin, that her silence doesn't represent acceptance of the kiddushin? So the Tanya, because we learn the following brisa. On my law, if a man says to a woman, Kinsi selazu, take this sela, this coin that I'm about to give you, shani chayev lechi, that I owe you, and receive it from me, take it from me. And the chaz of Yamala, but before she actually gets it, he goes and tells her, his kachi libo, but I want you to be mekudeshes to me with this coin. So it depends. If it was bishas matan mos, if he told his kachi libo before she actually got the money, so then, rotsa saw if she wants to be mekudeshes to him, mekudeshes. And then, Lo Ratzasa, which we'll explain in a moment what exactly that means, that she doesn't want to be mikudeshes to him, does she have to state so, or is it just the fact that she's silent? Lo Ratzasa, eina mikudeshes, then she's not mikudeshes. However, liachar matamos, if she already had received the money with the understanding that this was the seller shani chayiv lechi, that he owed to her, and she received that money not as kiddushin but as a payment of a debt, now the money belongs to her. It's her money. Later on, he can't go and say afilu rotsa, even if she's willing to accept the kiddushin after the fact. He says, oh, you know that money I gave you yesterday? I want that to be the case of kiddushin. Even if she's willing, afilu rotsa, she says, yes, that's wonderful. Ain't a mikudeshes. So you can't be mikudeshes to that because it's already hers, and you can't be mikadi somebody without giving them a shavu pruta. So this braisa, Rav Nachman is going to show us, illustrates the principle of if they were talking about shiduchim, then a silence will be accepting kedushin. Whereas if they're not talking about kedushin, the silence will not demonstrate accepting kedushin. Now, why? Because Rav Nachman says, what does the braisa mean when here it says my rotsa or my lo rotsa? It said in the first part over here, if she wants it rotsa mikudeshes, lo rotsa. If she doesn't want it, ain't a mikudeshes. What does that mean? Elaine, what if you're going to tell me rotsa means the omer in that she said yes, I want to be mikudeshes to you, and lo rotsa means that she said the omer lo, I do not want to be mikudeshes to you, then it wouldn't be necessary to state so, because ha ishtika havu kiddushin, because that would imply that if she was silent, it would be kiddushin. How could that possibly be? In that situation, then don't tell me the case of Ratzisa, then just tell me the case of she's silent. Then it's the Mikudeshes stop. Just say she's Mikudeshes without having to say anything. The fact that you said Ratzisa, that she has to say something, implies that in the case where she doesn't say anything, she's not Mikudeshes. Ki Hasam, just like in that Brisa that we learned in yesterday's shir, where the person said to a woman, this is a Pikadon, I'm giving this to you as a Pikadon. But before he gave it to her, he says, I'm giving it to you as Kiddushin. So if she hadn't gotten this item, which originally was Bikadon, but then he subsequently knows it was a Kiddushin, and she accepts that, then in that situation, the Stam position, even if she doesn't say anything, is that she is Mikudeshes. In that case, we said, was not only if she said she would be Mikudeshes, but even if she was silent. The fact that she accepts it and doesn't say anything, and she is not entitled to it, so therefore, if she's accepting it, so her silence implies acceptance. So to over here, if she had been silent, it would have been fine. So therefore, you don't have to tell me in the case of Ratsa. So obviously, Ratsa doesn't mean that she stated yes, and Lo Ratsa doesn't mean that she stated no. Ella, what does it mean? Ella Ratsa, the Omer in, Ratsa means that she said yes, but Lo Ratsa means the Ishtika. That's the case where she says nothing. So therefore, the Kartani, the Eina Mekudeshes. And here, it says that she's not Mekudeshes. Now, why in this situation is she not Mekudeshes? My time, well, Yechol Lameima, because she could say, in Shakli, Vididi Shakli, because she could say, listen, you owed me the money, so therefore, I'm taking back what you owe me. I don't have to say yes or no. I'm taking back my money. You owe me the money. You admit you owe me the money, and therefore, you change around and say, Iskashli Bo. No, I'm just taking back the money that you owe me. So therefore, the case over here of Ratzos, where she said yes, and the case of Lo Ratzos, where she did not say anything. And therefore, the Elakasha, Hach, the Kitcho, Begezel, Vachamus, Begneva, or Shechotov, Selim, Yod, the Kitcho, Mikudeshes. Why in that situation is she Mikudeshes by being silent when it was her thing? And here we're saying in the case that we just described right now, where he said, I'm giving you back in this money that I owe you, but I want you to be Mikudeshes to me with it. There, if she's silent, she's not Mikudeshes. What's the difference between the two? Oh, they're exactly the same, unless you add. Rav Nachman tells us, El Alav, Shmamina, aren't the two cases talking about Hod the Shadich, Hod the Lo Shadich? In the case where we said that she's not Mikudeshes with the Chiv, the Shani Chayiv Lichi, the amount of money that he owed her, and then he changes it and says his Kachlibo, so there she's saying, I want this, it's my money back. And therefore, we weren't talking about Shiduchim, and therefore, if her silence implies nothing, her silence implies that she's not, in fact, getting married to him. However, in the case where they were talking about Shiduchim, and her silence there, even though it was her Gezel, Chomos, and Geneva that was given to her, or Shechotah, Selah, Miyad, the Kidsha, she is Mikudeshes because they were talking about Shiduchim. So this is what Rav Nachman says. This is the proof that what I'm saying is correct. So therefore, you have to look at the context. If they're talking about Kiddushin and she's silent, so then her silence implies acceptance of the Kiddushin. But if they're not talking about Shiduchim and it's her item, so then her silence implies nothing. She wants to just get her item back. And the fact that he's keep on saying, you're Mikudeshes to me, is irrelevant and it means nothing. She's not Mikudeshes. Now Gemara is going to tell us about what happened upon the death of Rav Asi. And this is something that is still done even today, that sometimes when a person passes away, they put together a compendium of all of the different Torah that the person said, or Maisim Shahaya. It's very, very common that these things are done even nowadays. And this is what was done when Rav Asi, the great Rav Asi, the first generation Amora from Eretz Yisrael, passed away. Kinoch Nafshei, the Rav Asi, when Rav Asi passed away, Ailu Rabbanon, the rabbis got together, l'niktuninhu l'shmaisesei, to go and gather up his shmaises. As Rashi says, niskabtsu l'beis ha-medrash, they all gathered together in the beis medrash, the amru, and they said, kol sheshama shmua chadosha mipiv, yomarna, v'yosnei chavei rav. Anybody that heard something that Rav Asi had said that is new, that not everybody knows, so tell it to us. So we can gather them together and not forget them. So therefore, this was something that was done upon Rav Asi's patira, and we'll have a number of members now, the Gemara tells us, that Rav Asi had said. So one of the rabbis got up and spoke. Who was this rabbi? Rav Yaakov Shmei. This was Rav Yaakov. And he said to all the chaverim, this is what Rav Asi said. Amar Rabbi Mani, he said over the name of Rav Mani, Kishem she'ein isha niknes v'pachos misha v'pruta, kach ein karka niknes v'pachos misha v'pruta. Just like we've been learning in our Masechta so far, this beautiful Masechta of Kiddushin, that a woman can only be niknes, she can have Kiddushin, only if it's worth a pruta or shava pruta, so to karka, you can't purchase karka unless you pay a pruta or shava pruta for the karka. So that is what Rav Yaakov said over the name of Rav Asi. And he said it over the name of Rav Mani. Amrulei, the rabbi said to this Rav Yaakov, aye, but we learned in the Brayis Vatanya, afa pishen isha niknes v'pachos v'shava bruta, karka niknes v'pachos v'shava bruta. But we have a Brayis, and it seems to go against this. Now, Rav Asi was great, Rav Mani was great, but there are Amoraim, and they usually don't argue with the Brayis. And here the Brayis says that even though a woman cannot be niknes, she doesn't accept Kiddushin if it's not worth a shava bruta, but karka can be acquired with less than a shava pruta. This contradicts what you just said. So Amalhu, Rav Yaakov tells him, no, you're misunderstanding. This braisa ki tanya hi, this braisa is talking about bechalipin, and in chalipin, which is an exchange, I give you this, and I get the karka in its place, a kinyan chalipin, so that does work with less than a shava pruta, the tanya. Konin bechli, you can go and make a kinyan chalipin and acquire the field by giving somebody a kli, and with the exchange of the kli for the field, it can work. Even though this kli, even though this utensil, this item is actually worth less than a shava pruta. So a kinyan chalipin can work with less than shava pruta, but actually giving over money, so that cannot work if it's less than a shava pruta, both by a woman for kiddushin as well as by the purchase of a field. Okay, hador yasve, another maisa came that they said over Kamrei Hadamar Yudamar Shmuel, another maisa that they're going to tell us about Rav Asi, but first they bring down what Rav Asi is going to be arguing with Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. What did Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel say? So Kol Sheini Yodei B'Tiv Gitim V'Kiddushin, this is a famous statement that we had earlier in the Masechta. If somebody is not familiar with the dinim of both Gitin and Kiddushin, so such a person, lo esek imohen, he shouldn't be a Masadir Kiddushin, he shouldn't be a Masadir Gitin. The person is not very knowledgeable in all the details of Kiddushin and Gittin, so he shouldn't go and arrange them. He shouldn't be the one to make sure that a marriage is done kosher, or that a get is done kosher, because of the tremendous takala potential over here. If the marriage is not really a marriage, that this woman is in fact not an Eishes Ish, so has huge ramifications. If the woman in fact is an Eishes Ish, and he says that she's not an Eishes Ish, has huge ramifications. And the same thing with a get. So therefore, only a person, Yehuda Amar Shmuel said, that is very, very knowledgeable, is a real baki in he knows the dinim of Gittin and Kiddushin, so only such a person should be Masadir Kiddushin and Masadir Gittin. So, along comes Rav Asi, Rav Yochanan, the caution li olam yosem midor hamabul, and these rabbis that don't know the dinim of Kiddushin and Gittin, nevertheless are Masadir Gittin and Kiddushin, so woe is to us, they bring worse things to the world, the caution, they bring terrible things to the world, olam Yosem Midor HaMabul, even in the sins of the Mabul. These rabbis that don't know what they're doing, they're not experts in Gittin and Kiddushin, and nevertheless they go and arrange Gittin and Kiddushin, they bring more destruction to the world than even the Dor HaMabul did. And this is based upon a Pasuk, and I'll read you the entire Pasuk. It's actually two Pesukim in Hosea, in Perek Dalet, Pasuk Beis and Pasuk Gimel. We'll read the whole Pesukim first, and then we'll go and darshan them the way the Gemara does. As the first Pasuk tells us, Alo v'chachesh v'ratzoach v'gonov v'na'ov. That's the simple way to read them, lumped like that. The Gemara will darshan, however, the next word, paratsu, is also being included in this first group. But alo v'chachesh means to swear falsely, v'ratzoch means to kill, v'ganov means to steal, v'na'ov means to go and commit adultery. Paratsu, they were spread out. There was lots of it. However, we'll darshan this word paratsu differently. V'damim b'damim nagu, and this caused the bloods to go and meet. In other words, more death occurred. And the next pasuk then says, al kain to eval aris, because of all of these sins that were just done, so the world was destroyed. The umlal kol yoshev ba, and everybody in it is sent into galus. The chayas hasod of over shemaim, even the animals in the fields and the birds in the sky, the gam degei hayom, and even the fish in the sea. They will go and be wiped out, v'gomer. Now, v'gomer, really, it's the end of the pasuk. I'm not sure what the word v'gomer is over here referring to. In any event, this is the two psukim from Hosea that we're now going to darshan. So the Gemara tells us, my mashma, why does Rav Asi bring down from this first pasuk, alo v'chachesh ratzoch v'gonov v'nov paratsu v'domim v'domim v'nago, how does bring down the Masadir Kedushin, the Masadir Gittin, that don't know what they're doing, or even worse than the Dor HaMabul? So, the drush is as follows. Kidimatagim Rav Yosef. As Rav Yosef explained in the Targum, Rav Yosef was blind, and Rav Yosef didn't want to learn Torah Shebichsav because the Torah Shebichsav has to be read from inside and shouldn't be said outside, as opposed to Torah Shebaal Peh, which was originally always said outside. It was said by heart and not written down. So Rav Yosef, who was blind, was a baki in the Targum, because the Targum you can learn outside. So Rav Yosef explained that the Targum, Yonason ben Uziel, on the Navi on Hosea tells us as follows, that this word over here, Moldin Benin Minishe Chavreon, the word Paratsu is another bad thing that they were doing. It doesn't mean that it's spread out. It means that the word Paratsin, as Rashi tells us, comes from the Pasuk, V'chasheyenu oso chen yibed v'chen yifrots. So the word yifrots means that they will have more children. So it means over here that these people committed adultery, molden benin, meaning sheikh avrihon, and they would have children with their neighbors' wives. So they would go and have their, committed adulterous relation with their friends' wives, their neighbors' wives, and as a result of that, they would go and lead to v'domim b'domim nugo, choven al choven mosifin. They would add sin upon another sin. They would do the sin of Neev, and then they would go and have children that would lead to mamzerim becoming. So they would do the sin over here of Neev and have children from it. And then the next pasuk said, then the world was destroyed. Now, al kain to eval ha'aretz v'umlau kol yosheba v'chayes ha'sadim ova shamayim v'gam digay ha'yom yesofu. And again, the word v'gomer seems to be unnecessary. So this means that because of this last sin, and we'll explain why we mean only the last sin, because of paratsu, because of this sin of committing adultery and then having mamzerim as a result of that adultery, so the world was destroyed. Now, that is what is happening now in Hosea. As opposed to V'ilu B'dor HaMabul, it says, Lo nigzu gzera al dogim shebayam. All the animals of the world were destroyed, but not the fish in the sea. As the pasuk says, Nemar, Mikol shebecharova meisu, all the animals on the land died, however, V'lo dogim shebayam, but not the dogim that were in the yam. As opposed to over here, V'ilu hach, in the pasuk in Hosea, Afilu dogim shebayam. So because of this pritzos in the adultery and causing of mamzerim, so the world was destroyed. Now, these judges somehow contributed to the fact that this adulterous relationship was going on, and therefore, as a result of the adulterous relationships, because of the lack of knowledge of understanding of Kiddushin and Gitin, so adultery occurred, which otherwise might not have occurred, and mamzerim were brought into the world. That caused the destruction of the world. So therefore, you see that this caused even the destruction of the fish in the sea, so that's even greater than the destruction that was caused by the Dor HaMabul. Now, why don't we say over here that this destruction that's described in Pasuk Gimel in Perek Dalet of Hosea, this Va'al Kein Te'ev Al Ha'aretz, goes on all of those sins, on the Olo V'Chachesh, V'Ratzoch, V'Gonov, V'Nov, and Paratzu. Why do we say it only goes on Paratzu? Deima Ad Avi L'Kulu, maybe you have to do all of them in order for this punishment to have occurred, and not just the last one. So the word says, don't even think that. Lo Sol K'daitach, because D'chsev Ki Mipnei Olo of Lo Ha'aretz, because we have another pasuk, this one is from Yirmiyahu, that says, because of the Allah, the Chachesh, because of the swearing falsely, that the land was destroyed. So you see that even one of them, any one of them, is enough to cause this destruction. So Gemara says, nu, the Emor, Allah, Luchud. Maybe the pasuk from Yirmiyahu tells us that, yes, the swearing of the falsely is going to cause the destruction, but Vahanach, Luchudayin, but the others, you have to do them all together. They would not, on their own, be enough to destroy the world. It's only the Allah, the Chachesh, that is enough to destroy the world alone, but all the others are needed to be done in order for the world to be destroyed. And therefore, you have no raya that the Masada Kedushin and the Masada Gittin that caused these adulterous relations to occur, because the people mistakenly thought that they weren't really married. married, and therefore it was okay for them to get married to the second person. They really were married to the first person, so because of the lack of knowledge of Kiddushin and Gittin, the rabbis caused this problem to occur, and therefore the rabbis are held accountable. So the Gemara says, how do we know that it's not necessary to do all of those things and not just the last one? As we turn to Yud Gimel on the base, and we say, no, does it say a vav over there? Mikasiv u paratsu. It doesn't say u paratsu, meaning and also. All the others had a vav. So the psukim that we read, it was alo v'chachesh, v'ratso, v'gano, v'nov, and then it doesn't say v'paratsu or u paratsu. It just says paratsu. And therefore, paratsu ksiv, teaching us that it's the last thing, and only the last thing, that actually caused all of the destruction to occur. And that's why Ravasi's statement that the judges that unfortunately don't follow what Rav Yehuda Meshul said, that you should be an expert in Kiddushin and Gittin, or else don't be involved in Kiddushin and Gittin, and then the judges unfortunately didn't follow that, they caused this tremendous destruction to occur because it led to adulterous relationships, albeit even unintentionally, and it led to the bringing of Mamzerim into the world. Another member from Ravasi, Hodu Yasvi Kamer, they got together and was still talking about members of Ravasi, and they said the following, Hodu Nan, that we learned in Mishnah and Kinim. It said, Ho'isho Sheviyo Chatosu Mesa, if a woman gave birth to a child, and she has to go bring a Ola and a Chatos, so if she's poor, she's allowed to bring an Ola bird offering and a Chatos bird offering. So she brought her Chatos bird offering, Ho'isho Sheviyo Chatosu Mesa, Yaviyu Yarshin Olasa, so the Yarshim have to go and bring either her Ola bird offering or her Ola animal offering because it's in her estate. She was obligated to it. She already brought the Chatas. The Chatas can't be brought after her death, but she brought the Chatas while she was alive, and then that was she passed away. So the Yarshim go and take from her estate, and Yaviyu Yarshin Ola Sa from her estate. And on that, Rav Yehuda Meshul said, that's only an obligation on the estate if it was already designated while she was alive that this is her carbon ola. But if it wasn't designated while she was alive, then it is not obligated to be brought. It's only in a situation where she had designated it while she was still alive that the Yoshim have the obligation to go and bring it. But no such animal was designated, so then the opinion of Rehuda Meshmul, which we'll see Ravasi argues with, is that the woman from her estate isn't brought an Ola on her behalf. Alma, what do you see from here? The review of the Meshul holds, Kusaba Shibudo Lav Deraisa. This obligation to go and bring the bird offering is not an obligation with Deraisa. And therefore, we don't force the Yarshim to go and bring this. On the other hand, Ravasi disagreed. I'm Ravasi Rav Yochanan. Ravasi said, Rav Yochanan. Even though the Chatas was brought during her lifetime, and even though she hadn't yet designated the animal or the bird to be the Ola, nevertheless, Rav Asi, in the name of Yochanan, says that the people who inherit her, her Yarshim, have to go and bring this Ola, because Alma Kasavar Shibuda Havadarais, because they hold that this Shibud, to bring this Ola, had occurred while she was alive, she had given birth, she was still alive. And therefore, the obligation to go bring this Ola already existed, and therefore the Shibud on the estate is a Shibud D'Araisa. So the machlokas between Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel and Rav Asi Amar Rav Yochanan is whether or not the Shibud is D'Araisa or not to bring the Ola. So Gemara says, but they've already argued about this previously. Why do we need this argument again? We have the same machlokas between Shmuel and Rav Yochanan already, because we have another statement that says, the Rabu Shmuel, the Amar Tavayu, that in the following case, Rabu Shmuel both held, and the critical point over here is that Shmuel holds like this, Milval Peh, if a person lends somebody else money, but he did it without a shtar, he did a loan, a regular verbal loan, Milval Peh, so Ruvain lends Shimon money. So, Eino Gova, this debt cannot be collected if Shimon cannot pay it back. So Eino Gova, this debt cannot be paid back. That's the gear that we have. Eino Gova, because it's talking in the feminine lashon, because it's talking about the milva. Others have the girsa instead of Eino Gova, feminine, they have the girsa Eino Gove, masculine, because it's talking about that Reuven can't go and collect this debt. So Reuven is masculine. In any event, this debt cannot be collected min ha-yarshim. If Shimon passes away, you can't go to the Yarshim and say, hey, you owe us this debt, and therefore pay us back. And likewise, lo min ha-lekuchos, if Shimon is still alive, but he has no property, but he had property that could have theoretically been leaned property, you can't go and collect it from those lekuchos. So if Shimon had property at the time of the loan, but it's a verbal loan, and he had given, then he sold his property to Levi, so even though Shimon has no property, he can't pay back the loan, you can't go to Levi in this situation, even though Levi had purchased this after the milvah alpeh had taken place. That is the opinion of Shmuel, as well as Rav, but we're interested right now in the opinion of Shmuel, and Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, again, we're interested right now in the opinion of Rav Yochanan, but Reish Lakish said the same thing, the Amrit Tavayim, no, this milvah alpeh, go there, bein min ha-yarshim, bein min ha-lechukos, this debt can in fact be collected from both the Yarshim and from the Lekuchos. Oh, so it seems over here that this is, again, the same exact machlokas as to whether we say the Shibuda is Midaraisa, that Shmuel, as well as Rav, hold that the Shibud is not Midaraisa, like we said over here, in our case, with the woman dying and the Ola being brought on her behalf. So they hold that the Shibud is not Midaraisa, whereas Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan, again, we're interested in Rav Yochanan's opinion, they hold that the milvah alpeh is in fact the Shibud Midaraisa, and therefore can be collected. So why do we need the machlokas twice? We need the machlokas in the case of the woman with the chatas that was brought while she was alive, that the Yarshim do or do not have to bring the Ola when she's dead, machlokas Shmuel and Rav Yochanan. And we need the machlokas in this case with the milvah alpeh. Why do we need both? Someone says tzricha, we need both. Because if you only told me the one with the woman with the chatas, or you only told me the one with the milvah alpeh, I wouldn't be able to learn out the other one. Why not? Because the at my behalf, if you only told me this latter case that we just learned, the case of the milvah alpeh, I would have said in that situation do Shmuel and also Rav, Bahak Kamer Shmuel, only in this situation would Shmuel and Rav hold that the Shibud is not midaraisa, because the milvah alpeh is not a din daraisa. Mishum, the lo milvah suba batari, because it's not something that is written down in the Torah, this milvah alpeh. And therefore, we would say that, okay, you can be makel in this situation and say that the shibud doesn't occur midaraisa. Abu Bahach, in regards to the woman who gave birth, so there is an obligation, min ha-Torah, for her to bring an ola and a chatos, and therefore one could argue maybe that Shmuel, as well as Rav, would hold in that situation, maybe they admit to Yochanan Reish Lakish that in fact the shibud daraisa does occur because there was a din in the Torah that was involved. So maybe, in a din in the Torah, they would say that the Shibud is midaraisa. Oh, therefore, you have to tell me the case, that even in the case of Dirabbanan, the milvah alpeh, that they hold that there's no Shibud min ha-Torah, as well as the case of the daraisa case, that there's no Shibud min ha-Torah. So that's why you need the case of the woman with the Ola requirement. Just tell me that one, I don't know the other one. No, maybe, v'yeshwin b'ha, I would say only in the case of the daraisa, the Shibud daraisa of the Ola, b'ha, komar Rav Yochanan, as well as Reish Lakish, the milvah, k'suv b'torah, k'suv b'shtar damya. Because this obligation of bringing the Ola is written in the Torah. So milvah, the k'suv b'torah, this obligation that is written in the Torah, they would say, yeah, in that situation, it's a Shibud daraisa. But you know what? Maybe they would be mo'ed Abu Bahak. In the case of the milvah alpeh, maybe Rav Yochanan as well as Reish Lakish would be mo'ed, eima mo'ed le Lishvul and Terav. And therefore, we would say that in the Rabbanan case, maybe the Shibud is not midaraisa. So therefore, tzricha, you need both cases to show us the strength of each of their respective Shidas, that even in the case of a daraisa Shibud, the opinion of Shmuel and Rav is that there is no Shibud midaraisa, and even in the case of a Shibud midarabanan, Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish showed that there is a Shibud midaraisa. Tzricha, you need both cases. Rav Papa tells us, how do we paskin Hilchasa? The halacha is a compromise between them, but not exactly for the reasons of each one saying. Hilchasa, the din is milvah alpeh gov min ha-yoshim. In fact, the milvah alpeh could in fact be collected from the yoshim, like the opinion of Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. In fact, we usually pass like Rav Yochanan over both Shmuel and Rav individually, but even when they're together. So even though it's Rav or Shmuel, the Amar Tavayu, we usually pass like Rav Yochanan over them. So Rav Papa says, we in fact pass like Rav Yochanan as well as Reish Lakish over here, that Hilchasa is that Milvah Alpeh is Govim in a Yorshin. It can be collected because there's a Shibud D'Oraisa, and you can collect it from the Yorshin. However, midrabanan, we come along and say the eino govim in alakuchas, but we don't allow you to go collect it from the levi, from the third party who had purchased the land of Shimon after the milvah alpeh. We don't allow you to collect from the quote leaned properties in this situation because they're not really leaned. The eino govim in alakuchas. Why not govim in yarshim? We allow you to collect from the yarshim because shibud did the raisa. And as we said, we paskin like Rav Yochanan and then Reish Lakish that the shibud mid the raisa does take effect. We said that Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish hold that the shibud the raisa is taking effect over here, even on a din derabbanan, even on a milvah alpeh. However, we don't allow you to collect over here, even though mid the raisa you could collect. We say hefker based and hefker that we don't allow you to go collect over here. The eino govim in alakuchos. The less lay kolah. We want to protect real estate dealers. Nobody's going to ever want to buy real estate because you can't go and do a title search on an oral loan. You can only do a title search on written document. So a written document will have a call to it. So therefore, let the buyer beware. Levi, when he purchases, he knows that there's a chance that this item could be collected from him and have to go to the court to go get his money back because there's a shibud on this field and he'll understand. Maybe he'll pay less for it. He'll go and buy a beware. He'll say, no, I know Shimon. I think Shimon will be able to pay it back. He has enough funds in his bank. So Levi is willing to go and purchase it even though he knows that there is a shibud on it. But with a milval peh, how is poor Levi supposed to know that there's a shibud? So listen, if Levi's going to say, listen, I bought this in what seemed to be perfectly fair and normal circumstances, and now you're taking it away from me, next time I won't buy it. And that's going to destroy the real estate world because of people being worried that they'll purchase something, but then it'll be taken from them. So therefore, the Eino Govim in Alakuchos Midrabbanim, because the last Lekolin, the rabbi said, it's much better to go and protect normal real estate deals than to go and protect this person who lent the money with a Milval Peh. If you want to be protected, go and write a shtar, and then you won't have any concerns or problems. Okay. Now we go and quote the next part of the Mishnah. It said, V'kones asma v'ged v'misas abal, that a woman becomes no longer married with Nebuch, either the death of her husband or a divorce from her husband. So, Bishlam get says, B'feirish of the Torah, the Chsiv, it says, V'kos of law sefer k'risus, and then it says right after that, Rashi revises, it says, V'yotso of oisel ishacher. So she goes and becomes married to somebody else. So clearly, after the get, she's allowed to marry somebody else. The Torah b'feirish says so. However, surprisingly, Elamisa Sabal Binolan. How do we know that a woman is allowed to get remarried if she's an Amana? If her husband passes away, maybe that's it. You're married for life or even in death. How do we know that after the death of the husband, a woman, an Amana, is allowed to be remarried? Shmuel says it's a Svara. It's logic. Svara who? Because who I saw, he was the one that made her forbidden to go and be married to anybody else by marrying her, and therefore, upon his death, who sure saw, he goes and frees her to go marry somebody else. Just like when he married her, he did that, so too. When he dies, he did that, and therefore, it's logic, it's svaru, that a woman who is an amana is allowed to go get married to somebody else. Ayyur says that's not such a great svara, because we find that in regard to all the prohibited relationships that came about as a result of this marriage, for example, she married Reuven, she can no longer marry Reuven's father, Yaakov. She can no longer marry Reuven's son. She can no longer marry Reuven's brother outside of a potential Yibam situation. So the whole Arias, all of the Dinam Arias that are now prohibited relationships to this woman because she married Reuven, so the Asal who Reuven caused them to be in existence because it's his brother, his father, his son, below Sharalu, but upon his death, they aren't permitted. So guess what? Maybe one could argue that the woman is married forever. And if her husband never passed away, so then she wouldn't be allowed to marry somebody else, just like she can't marry his father even after he passes away. She can't marry his son, his brother, even after he passes away. So too, she can't marry any other man even after she passes away. So you can't tell me logic. So that can't be the reason. Where it says, Ella, you're right. Ella, the Amar Rachmana. And the fact that the Torah tells us, Yevama she'ein lo banim asura, if a Yevama doesn't have any children, she's asura until she goes and marries the Yavam. So she can't marry anybody else. So too, ho yesh lo banim muteris. The implication is that if she does have children, then she can marry everybody else. So it's a different type of a svara. We learn it out from a Yavam. The Yavam is asking her to marry everybody else. If there is no Yibum situation, she is allowed to marry everybody else. But says that's also not true. Maybe Vidilma ain't lo banim asurli alma v'shari liyavim. If she has no children ever from her first husband who passes away, so then she's permitted to marry the Yavam and nobody else. But guess what? Maybe you could argue if she does have children, yesh lo banim, not only can she not marry the Yavam, but she can't marry anybody else. The kuliyamanami asura. And again, we're left with the potential. Of course, it's not the halacha. We're left with the potential that if a woman is an amana, maybe she can't get married to anybody else again. She was married to her first husband. That's it. She can never get married to somebody else again if she's an amana. Someone says, you're right, that can't be the source. Ella, we're learning that from Kohen Gadol and his marriage. Ella, with the Amar Rachmana, the Torah tells us, Almana, the Kohen Gadol, a widow is not a married Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol has to marry a Besula, so he can't marry a woman who's an Almana. Oh, implication being, the Kohen Gadol can't marry the Almana, however, oh, the Kohen Hedjot, Shaya, but the Kohen Hedjot is allowed to go and marry an Almana. Therefore, an Almana is permitted to people after her husband's death. Says, again, not necessarily so. Maybe the Dilma, the Kohen Gadol, Balav. For her to marry a Kohen Gadol, that's a stronger Isser. It's an Isser of a lav. However, the Kuliyama, it's only an Asay. The theoretical Asay is that only in a case of divorce is she allowed to go marry somebody else. Otherwise, she wouldn't be allowed to go marry somebody else. So that's an Asay. So granted, the Kohen Gadol is a Los Asay, but maybe for everybody else, it's still an Asay. Someone says, no. Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu have made an asay over here? If the death of the husband removes the isser that you're not allowed to go be with anybody else, so then it should remove it entirely. And if in fact, if in fact the husband's death doesn't permit it to everybody else, so then let it stay in its original state, that it's a din of adultery if she were to go marry somebody else after her husband passed away, just like it originally was. So either his death helps totally, or his death should help not at all. So why are you saying it helps a little bit, so to say, to knock it down to an asay? What would be the hava minute to say that? Well, it says, why not? Alam Allah, we find elsewhere that that's exactly what happens. Afikta mimisa vokimta lasay. That why not say that, yes, it removed the severity of the illness to make it not a chi of misa, but it left it with an asay. Because we have precedent for this. Mide dahavi apsulei hamukdashim. This is exactly what occurs with apsulei hamukdashim. What is apsulei hamukdashim? A person designated an animal to go be a carbon, and then the animal gets a blemish, it gets a mum, and it no longer can be brought as a carbon. So you go and redeem it, and it no longer has the full dinim of a hektish animal, but it still has partial dinim of a hektish animal. Exactly analogous to this case, that she's still considered a married woman, albeit not with all of the dinim that was beforehand. So just like we have this by Psulei Mukdashim, we could have this by Namana as well. What's the din by Psulei Hamukdashim? The Meikaru originally is Mila. There is a din of Mila. Well, the animal is a tam. Well, it is a non-blemished animal. So then if you use this animal, so then you chayev Mila. If you got benefit from a Veshava Pruta, so then there's a din of Me'ila. You have to go and pay back to Hekdesh plus a fifth the benefit that you got, plus you have to bring in a Sham Me'ila. So those dinim of Me'ila apply if the animal's a Tomim. Vasire Begizav Avoda, and certainly the animal still can't be sheared and it can't be worked with. However, if the animal gets a blemish, parkinu, and then you go and redeem it, so mi'ilo lesbu, there is no din of mi'ilo anymore, the person is allowed to go and take this animal and make it into a barbecue. However, the retaining din of begiz of avoda, that they are a sire, is still there. And therefore, we do have a precedent that some of the dinim go away and some of the dinim stay there. So too, by this woman, we can say that some of the dinim go away, she's still considered a married woman, but not for the chiyav of misa, but she's still considered a married woman, that she can't get married to somebody else. Vokim tala say. So therefore, that's not implausible, and therefore, we're still looking for a source to say, how do we know that a woman who's an amon is allowed to get married? So the Gemara says, Ela midam akra, because the pasuk tells us, pen yomus bamuchama vishaker yikachena. Under certain situations, we're not dealing with a battle, a muhama that's a chiv to go to. It's an elective battle to go to. So then we let certain people be off from the battle. So a man who just got married, so we allow him to go and not go to the battle because maybe he'll die in the battle. Pen yomus muhama vishacher yikachena, and another man will take that woman as his wife. So a man who had only done erisim with his wife, but hadn't yet done nisum with his wife, we free him up from going out to a muhemis rishus, because maybe he'll die in the battle, and then another man will take his wife. Ah, you see clearly that another man is allowed to go take his wife, and Amana, therefore, is allowed to go and get married to another man. Morris says, no, maybe not. Maskif lo Rav Shisha Reda Rav Yidi. Rav Shisha, who's the son of Rav Yidi, says, no, maybe when it says, the ish acher yikochena, maybe it means, emo, who is this acher, man acher? It's all about the yavam. They obviously died childless. They never had nisuin, so they never had relations. So the other person that would take it would be his brother in yibam, but not another man. You can't bring me a right here that an amon is allowed to get married to any man. Maybe it's only the yavam. So Rav Ashi says that's not incorrect. Rav Shisha Breda Ravidi, his question is wrong for two reasons. Rav Ashi, based tshuvas badaba. There's two reasons why he's incorrect. Number one, chada, the yavam lo ikri acher. We wouldn't call the yavam an acher. He is considered in the place. The Makom Achiv, so therefore he wouldn't be called Acher, somebody else. So that's answer number one. No, you don't like that. No. Furthermore, you could argue much more strongly, Kasiv, Usneya Ha'isha Achron, because of the Sefer Krisus, and then it says later, Oh, Chiyomos Isha Achron. So we have over here the case of a first marriage that is a divorce occurs, and then a second marriage occurs. She's allowed to get married to somebody else. And then that person either divorces her, the second person divorces her, or the second person dies. In that situation, she's not allowed to go back to the first husband. Now, the iska shmisa legerishin, we see over here that only in this case where it's a machzir grusha, so after she gets married to somebody else, that you're not allowed to go get married to that first person. You can't go and remarry your wife that you divorced if she married somebody else. And it doesn't make a difference whether that marriage ended in the divorce, the second marriage, or it ended in the death of the second husband. She's not allowed to go and return to her first husband. Implication being, however, that only in that scenario can she not get married. So we compare over here the Gerushin and the Misa, and in this situation, this woman can't go marry her first husband, she can go marry anybody else. So therefore, this is the Raya, in fact, that a woman who is a widow is in fact allowed to get married, which of course is the halacha. We just have to find the source for it. Okay, this is the two dots. We'll stop here at the bottom of the Amud. With this, we conclude today's share.